I heard of you, folks. It's the unknown. Unknown. It's the unknown. Unknown preacher.
They're like, yeah, man, there's this guy.
His name's
such they're like, wait a minute, you don't tell me.
Well, let's do this. Like, so we could talk about, you mentioned you and your mom saw this black father really engage, right? And I'm having the next episode, I'm having three fathers on, and we're talking about fatherhood, and there's going to be a piece on people of color and being a father and how the stereotypes are just that, a stereotype. Like, if you look at the media and whatever you ever believed about black fathers not being around, that's the furthest from the truth. But we don't have to necessarily specifically say that, talk about the color piece, but we can talk about just fatherhood in general, because whether it's for the daughter or the son, they both need their dads, right?
Right.
Yeah, so, yeah, let's focus on that.
Okay, I'm down.
All right. So I'm recording now. So what you want to say about it?
Oh my god. Why did you
prepare
me about
that? That's why I put her on the spot.
She told me, yeah, she always doing me like that with threes. Give me three reasons why.
Well, what I say, okay, so, well, I can honestly say this, that since I've been here in this area, I've seen more engagement amongst black American fathers than I've ever seen in my life. I'm coming from a place where my brother, who is like, he was my role model always growing up.
Yeah.
He is, you know, I've watched him really for the last 20 plus years, you know, engage with not only his wife, but his children, and fearlessly lead the family.
Yeah.
With the fear of the Lord. And so, outside of that, I haven't seen too much on engagements, you know, and the engagement that I've seen, there was always some type of trauma there. But since God has relocated us to this jurisdiction, he's really shown me and given me much hope, even for my future, and especially the future of my three young daughters. You know, for black American fathers, black American men, and things of that sort, you know, so that's one. Thank you.
Really, really good stuff. So do you, like, I noticed when I go back and listen to our episode, you mentioned your father quite a bit, which just shows how much you love him and how important he was in your life, right? And so,
well, yes. My father wasn't there in life when I was younger. I didn't form a relationship with him until I called him when I was in my high school years, and I cursed him out and told him like how upset I was with him for not being around. And then when I was in my young 20s in college, that's when we started to form a relationship. And I didn't understand my father until now. Through the Holy Spirit and through just healings from, you know, spirits of rejection and abandonment that I felt growing up, and always looking for love in the wrong places. So my father, he was important in a way, but God and other men in my life that were role models for me. My brother, like my brother and my stepfather, who was very hands-on. He was Mulatto. And so, I mean, a father is always important, you know. But the foundation that was supposed to be set from a father point of view, I didn't get that from him.
Gotcha.
But I speak about him because I am very proud of his achievements. You know, he chose to be distant. He chose to chase his profession and be a servant of the community. And so, which is one of the reasons why I'm so adamant about my ministry starting from home. I stayed at home for many years so that my children could always have access to me, because I know what it feels like to not have a hands-on parent. So yes, my father was very important in that way, you know, but not in my early years. You know, there are things that, you know, he said to me that really kind of set me up, you know, but set me up for the future. But it was, you know, I pretty much everything that I learned about life through a mother and father, I'm sorry, a father and mother relationship, father and daughter relationship,
yeah,
that came from somebody else.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Now let me ask you this.
Well, I'm gonna say this real first. Let me say this first. You've been living down here for how long now?
10 months.
All right, you about to be Southern. I want you to when this episode posts, I want you to listen to this and then go back and listen to your episodes, because you're talking slower now, but go ahead. Ask me what you're going to ask.
That's your work, Lonzo, because I got to listen to you. I got to listen to you all the time, so, you know, I gotta talk the way I listen.
Now, where are you going to ask me?
No, I was just kidding. Now, let me ask you this. I was just kidding.
Okay. Well, my dad, so from the time I was 12 to about 23, 24, he wasn't in my life. And it almost never came to pass, because he was reaching out, and I was like, really, just no, I'm not going to talk to him. I was bitter. I was angry. And I have to give credit to my wife, because she was the one that said, you really need to call your dad. And I'm so, so thankful that I did. And a big misunderstanding, things that I was led to believe for years that were really not true. And I'm just so glad that he and I connected, and I really got to know him, although as an adult, but I just really garnered so much respect for who he was and the work he's done. He was a working man. He was a deacon in his church, and he had a lot of love. And so it was just a blessing that I got to spend those adult years with him. So, but to your point, I had my uncle, I had my cousins, I had, everywhere I worked, I was like the youngest guy there. And so a lot of the older dudes would pull me to the side and say, hey, little brother, this what? I mean, when I tell you, there's so many people down here who just really took time and like poured into me. And so I give so many people the credit for that. So, yeah. You there?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm listening to you.
Oh, okay. So.
Go ahead. I was just listening to what you're saying and taking it all in. You know,
we have not recorded together in a while. I miss Luna cutting in and taking over the show, and I need more of that.
Well, you know, that's your fault, and I always say that is your fault, and you know, everybody knows that I make the show, but you gotta get with your jealousy, man. You're jealous of me.
I'm trying to silence you.
I know, everybody, and it's not a good look, because you know, I'm on your team.
You can't match the proficiency of our women in a real world democracy. They are winning. There's so much controversy about women in ministry, but in reality, when it comes to maintaining the church, they are the key. She is the person who gave you birth and wiped your nose, the person who gave up her life to give you food and clothes, the person who's attentive and she's always concerned, give, but gets nothing in return. I learned as I lived that there's nothing she can't do. Closest thing to God's love, hers unconditional too. She's the glue, the rock. Yes, no, she's tougher than leather, which brings me back to the subject. We need her to keep the church together. If divided, we fall, then we've been disconnected for a minute, because I'm in the church walls and very few men are in it. A minute when I said they're the key to this. I know about Timothy, but was it really about Ephesus? Was Paul referring to them? Or was it more general? Why, when we talk about women, it's always cynical. We're calling them loose and floozies and slags, but men do the same thing, but somehow we get a pass. At last, I see them blossoming and leading the church. It's like someone turned on the lights and now they recognize their worth. Deborah, Priscilla, Phoebe, and the wonders they've done. I'm picturing Aunt Esther waving a Bible on Sanford and Son, and none of us men know what it really means to be called a servant when you're really a queen church woman.
Atlanta is, studies show that black fathers are the most present in their kids' lives.
Really?
Amongst all demographics.
Wow.
And on top of that, single fathers have a higher graduation rate and lower incarceration rate than single moms and dual family households. Come on. That is a fact.
They ain't gonna like that.
So if you were raised in a house, you know.
So then with those stats really being relevant now, where is this myth still continuing to come from, you think?
The narratives. Yep. Think about it, right?
Rumors.
We all watch TV.
Right.
Everything that we consume comes from either through a phone, TV, or film, right?
Unfortunately.
There are people who have agendas, right? And part of that agenda is creating a separation between men and women in our communities. It's always been that way. It is a fact. We can't act like it's not the case. It is the case. The easiest way to disturb the distribution of black wealth from generation to generation is to eliminate the nuclear family. How do you eliminate the nuclear family? You take the father out of the home.
When you schedule it.
We're back, beautiful people. And that soundbite was, in fact, it was so, so true. And I had to fact check it before we recorded this episode. But multiple studies show that black fathers in America are among the most actively involved dads, especially compared to white and Hispanic fathers. And so let me break it down to you. A CDC study in 2013 revealed that 70% of co-residential black fathers bathe, dress, change diapers, or help their young children use the toilet on a daily basis. And this is compared to 60% of white fathers and 45% of Hispanic fathers. Adding to that, 78% of black dads ate meals with their children every day versus 74% of whites and 64% of Hispanics. 41% of co-residential black fathers help with homework on a daily basis. And this is ahead of 29% of Hispanic fathers and 28% of whites. So, man. And now let's go to the non-residential dad engagement, the fathers who aren't in the home. Among fathers not living with their children, Black dads are more likely to read, play with, or help care for their children daily. And also more likely to spend quality time and co-parent effectively. Wow, wow. My brothers, we rock, man. We rock. A lot of us, including myself, I didn't know that. But so months ago, I had mothers on here, and they did their thing. They did a phenomenal job. They provided their perspective on parenting. And now I have my brothers. The dads are on. And as Andre 3000 said back in the day, and he was referencing the South, I'm referencing this, the dads. Instead of the South, I'll say this. Let me say the dads have something to say. And with me today, the pastor of RC3, Pastor Dr. Emmanuel Holland. What's up, brother? How are you?
Well, all is well, man. That intro, that's amazing that you read those statistics. And I kind of getting into the questions ahead of time. But, man, I'm going to tell you, man, those statistics are amazing.
They are, man.
Alonzo, thanks for having me, brother.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. And my second guest, man, this is author, poet, founder, and CEO of Love is a Parable, J. Dwayne Garrett. How are you, my brother?
I am doing well. How are you guys doing? Thank you so much for having me on.
Absolutely. So Pastor Holland talked about those stats. What do you think, Jay? Man, did you know? Do you have any insight on that?
Yeah, actually, this is one of the things that I advocate for, because we contend with a couple of things. And one of them is the court of public opinion or societal norms. And so you hear a lot of rhetoric that is of an old narrative that Black fathers need to show up, Black fathers need to do this, and they need to do that. And I'm like, what else do you need us to do? Because those stats have been consistently progressive for the last 20 years.
Wow.
But still, for some strange reason, the old narratives, the negative narratives get the microphone. But the facts, for some reason, is always muffled and stifled.
Amen. And you know what's fun? Oh, were you going to say something, Pastor?
Yeah, I was going to say that he's spot on with that. And from a statistical standpoint, you all are on it. But I was going to explain a little later on in the broadcast how parenting to me is a matter of being a part, not a part, but being part, or effective parenting is part of being a part of your children's day instead of them making them part of yours. And if you all their day, then quite naturally, you're going to be part of dinner. You're going to be part of those conversations between them and their friends.
Yeah.
You know, instead of making them be part of your day, taking them with you everywhere you go. That's great.
Mm-hmm.
Breaking it down and being part of their day and being a fly on the wall and just being emotionally available, those statistics reign supreme.
Yes, yes. Thanks. And it's refreshing to hear both of y'all, of course, but also these stats, because I'm thinking as when my boys were little fellows, and all my circle of friends, we were all doing our thing. We were doing, what the statistics just highlighted, we were doing, including you, Pastor Holland. And so I don't know I don't know many fathers who would just disengage like that. But with the, like we talk about the media and other things, you just feel like maybe we're the exceptions, but it's really the norm.
A lot of
thinking in. Hey, I'm going to ask some questions, man, and we're going to just make this conversational, because this is good stuff. I know there are going to be so many people who get a lot out of this. And so we're going to drop it. I'm going to start with the first question. You know, just fatherhood is a huge responsibility, but it's also an opportunity to love God and prepare. And so I'll start with you, Dr. Holland.
what does being a father mean to you?
Well, you know, a father to me is someone that is really, really pushing responsibility.
Yeah.
You know, as we are training our children up in the way that they should go, according to Proverbs 22:6, it says, train up a child in the way he should go.
Yeah.
When he is old, he would not depart from it. I believe it's a matter of showing them how to be responsible.
Yeah.
Because we can't be with them everywhere they go. But if we teach them how to handle their responsibilities, then I do believe that we are setting them up for success.
Mm. I love it. And you know what's funny? Everything you said is so spot on. And that journey, right? So we're exposing them, but at the same time, we're evolving as well. And so I want to ask Jay this, because the journey of life is about exposure, adapting, evolving. So how has becoming a father changed you as a man, Jay?
That's actually a loaded question, because I don't know if it changed me as much as it pulled things out of me.
Mm.
Because I'm a product of what I like to say. I have three dads. My birth dad was an amazing father up until about six. And then when him and my mother divorced, he went from being this amazing person. When I say amazing, did homework on his back, kissed me goodnight, always told me he loved me, always was present. But when he got a divorce, he was like, I'm out. So I spent a lot of my life resenting him and not wanting to be like him. And it wasn't until I was 29 when I had my first child that I realized that parenthood was a choice. When I was signing the birth certificate, I said, oh, parenthood was a choice. So I instantly was able to forgive him because I respected his decision. If he decided not to be a parent, that was his choice. And I needed to respect that versus arguing and fighting with a decision that he made, and he wasn't really there. So I was arguing with myself.
Wow.
So it worked out in a way. When I realized parenthood was a choice and fatherhood was a choice, I made a decision to be a father. And I made a decision that, and I think it freed the stress of, oh, I got to provide for these individuals to where I choose to provide for these individuals. It took it from obligatory love or obligatory assignment to choice, freedom. So I realized that more about fatherhood was more about a freedom, because it's a freedom to help mold and shape individuals. It's a freedom, but also it helped heal the absence that my biological father was, but it helped me receive my adoptive fathers. I have a dad who took me in at 17. I spent so much time trying to hate my bio dad that I couldn't see the dad that stepped up. And that's the same for my bonus dad. These guys shaped me. These are who my kids see as grandfather, but these are the people that have been dad for me. So what happened was, it was a drawing to force me to see life outside of my sphere and realize that fatherhood was a beautiful decision that a lot of people don't get to make. So it helped me really become more of me and tap into that.
Wow, that's interesting. I want to go back to something. Jay and Alonzo, when I was talking about, when I quoted scripture of training up a child in the way he should go, I personally thought initially when I heard that many years ago, it was a matter of, what am I saying? It's not a matter of what I'm saying. It's, what am I doing? I'm training them, my children, based upon how I'm responding to adversity, how I am responding to life. And part of, Jay, what you was talking about, man, is, you know, I think about, it's a matter of the actions that, you know, you have your children have an opportunity to see how you respond.
Yeah.
So it's not so much as just what you're saying. They're looking to see what you are going to do, how you are handling things, man. I mean, something as simple as changing the tire, something as simple as, you know, hugging your spouse, showing them love, a healthy love, you know, in whatever your faith is, you know, I'm a believer in Jesus Christ, in showing them, demonstrating that faith, not just saying it, but demonstrating it.
Yeah.
So
I agree.
Man, I take it back to responsibility. We have a responsibility to father, responsibility.
And I, you know, everything you said is great, Dr. Holland, and that we come from that. Well, I come from that generation where parents were like, you know, do as I say, not as I do. And we already know it's not as effective, not knocking that generation, but you know what you know. And we learned a lot now. But I also like what Jay was talking about. He remembered how it was when his dad was there, and to see that transition, dad no longer in the home and you're not receiving that type of love and support, man. To me, that seems even harder if he wasn't there to begin with, because you know what it feels like. And now at that age, who knows, you know, maybe there was some self-blaming going on. You know, what did I do? That's wow. Hey, we have another panelist who just chimed in, got in. I want to introduce him to our audience, our wellness advocate, podcast host, and media owner, Cornelius Kurt. How are you, brother?
What's up, brother?
Man, fantastic. Thank you for having me. It's good to be seen.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Good to be seen. Thank you, man. Yeah. Good to have all three of you on. Do you want me to go skip over you, Kurt, or you want me to ask you this question?
No, it's totally up to you. Whatever you need.
We're going to ask you and keep it in rotation, because we're right at the third question. And so we were just talking about fathers in the home, the generational differences, and for lack of better words, free will, because Jay talked about, you know, understanding that his dad didn't really want to be a parent, I'm paraphrasing, anymore. And so I'm going to ask you this, because I can look at my childhood and my relationship with my dad. He never spanked me, never raised his voice. But when he spoke, I listened, right? I think many of us share that same story. So, Kurt, how do you think fatherhood has evolved from your father's generation to now?
Yeah, great question. For context, I'm coming from a space where my father wasn't in my life. My biological father didn't live with me. I didn't spend time with him. I've never had a meal with him. I do know who he is. We have had conversations, but that void left a hole. And so to answer your question, I think it's evolved in ways where there's more access to what a father could be. I do love the example of both Dwayne and Pastor Holland talking about how we can be more mindful. And then obviously I think all three of us, based on what I know, are going to have a biblical model of what fatherhood looks like. Yeah. And that looks totally different than how the world would maybe respond from fatherhood. So for me, I think the biggest thing that I'm seeing now is, and this is especially as Black men, mm-hmm. there's this narrative that we're not involved in our child's life, and data says something different. Data saying we are actually the best at being involved in our lives. And so I think that being able to see that and hear that, I think we have more of a, Jay said, a responsibility. And if you didn't come from that. And so for me, not having my father, I swore that even, you know, I had my first child at 19, I swore that I was going to be better than what I did not see. Yeah. And so.
I love it. And I think, we probably all have comparable stories. Dr. Holland hadn't really, I'm not trying to be intrusive, but I could just tell you that my father wasn't in the home with me either. And I had that same pledge as you, Kurt. I was like, hey, I'm going to love all of my boys. I'm going to be there for them. Be as active as I can. And so I think that adversity of not having that father kind of sparked something in our generations, right, to be a lot more involved. Mm-hmm. Anything to add to that, Dr. Holland?
I would say that, I go back again, that we have responsibility. Yeah. But the difference now, I believe that we how we father now than what we did back than what the baby boomers and traditionalists did, is that I believe now we father in a way where there are those that have paved the way for us to be able to provide a better life.
Yeah.
And so now it's not a matter of we gotta keep what we have. We gotta do the best to keep what we have. Now it's a matter of launching out and pursuing higher education in a way where you know it's gonna lead to building generational wealth. Now we are, I think that we are fathering now in a way where we're telling or asking or promoting our children to take a chance.
Yeah.
You know, we're not fathering out of, I don't want to say fear, but we're fathering out of a responsibility of showing them that there are other options, other ways to do things, to get things done. You know, the networking. And I believe that the lives that we lead as responsible parents, we are somewhat showing them that there's a way to get this done. You know, you're going to use social media. Okay, use it in a way that where it's going to be beneficial to you.
Yeah,
I believe now we're showing them that they're endless, that the potential is endless if they use these tools in the right way, opposed to misusing them or abusing them.
Amen.
I would add that just to your point too, Pastor, I think there is a little bit of fear. because there is so much uncertainty when it comes to parenting.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I had that weird thought that once you became an adult, you had it all figured out. And now that I'm an adult, and by definition, a middle-aged adult, and I still don't have it figured out, I include that kind of in my parenting. Like, to say I don't know, or to say, you know, I don't know, let's figure it out together. Whereas I do remember generations of old, it was because I said so.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't know either, but we didn't know that they didn't know. And I think it's okay to say, like, oh, I'm scared. I don't know how we gonna get this light bill paid today, this month. I think including those things, or the idea of our children growing up for a world that you never feel like they're prepared for, no matter how much you say that they're prepared. You like, I don't feel like they're prepared because there are so many nuances of life that we still figuring out. And I think it's our responsibility, to your point, in parenthood, to be more transparent and to be more honest, because that creates something different. I think it creates a different level of trust when we are transparent in that way.
Man, you cracked the nugget, Jay, because when you said the fear, the anxiety, I immediately went to the responsibility piece and, you know, the fear of like letting your child down. When you talk about school and church and, you know, just there's just so many factors that are on the line when you're talking about a parenting, right? Like, I don't want to fail. And I'm kind of going through the motions, trying to learn as I go. And we really, now that my boys are older, I have learned to, accept the fact, hey, I've done the best that I could. And there's a thing called free will. Again, I'm going to touch on it because we can expose them to the word. We can be the best parent we possibly can. But at the end of the day, that responsibility falls on them too, right? They have choices to make. And I think it takes wisdom, age to kind of come to that conclusion because everyone's watching you. And then don't even talk about what we said at the beginning. All of us agree statistically we're doing the right thing as African-American fathers, but that stigma in the media. So you're already feel like you have that against you, too. I know I'm getting long winded, but yeah, that's kind of what that's what came to me when you said that, Jay.
Yeah, I agree. And I don't think that it absolves. I think the part of parenthood that they didn't tell us, even though we know our children have free will, it doesn't absolve us of assuming responsibility when they mess up.
Yes.
We take it personal when they mess up. When they fail the test, we're failing the test. When they act out in school, we're acting out in school. When they make a poor decision, you're like, didn't I raise you better than that?
Yeah.
So I think that's part of parenting and being real, that you feel it even though you're trying to respect them and make it their decision. it still comes back on you because it's that ripple, that residual effect that sometimes it's hard to shake. I ain't gonna even lie. Hey, I'm still wrestling with it.
Yeah, well, I tell you what, will you wait until they reach the ages of my boys? I mean, 28, 24, and 23. When they make these mistakes, man, you know, I feel like, okay, you know, you made that mistake. I didn't make it. I showed you how to handle it. Now, you got to figure out how to get yourself out of it. Money don't grow on trees. I can show you how to, you know, teach you how to get this thing done. But let's be real about this. I can't pull out my I'm going to whoop you. No, uh-uh. Life is going to whoop you. Life is a lesson.
Yes.
So it get better faster. It get better. It get easier.
Man, I'm telling you, man. It get easier, but then it get bad. The part where it's easier is that your money is your money, and the part where it's bad is that you can't, when they make these mistakes, you can't get them out of it with
what
you say or with what you do. They have to be accountable for their actions. You know?
Hey, man. And, you know, that's what I can tell you for me, and the guilt was because I can be a workaholic, and the first thing I would go to, man, I'm working all the time. Maybe if I didn't work so much, but then it's a juggling thing because you, as you just said, you want to be a provider too. And so, and I'm going to ask you this, Emmanuel, because this is a tough one, but I've seen you do it. How do you stay present and connected with your children while juggling work and family and other obligations?
Well, you know, I believe you have to have a firm foundation. You have to lay the foundation initially. You can't wait and try to get on that train after it's been moving for years. You got to be there from the beginning in order to be effective. You got to be present. And if you are present, you're able to kind of somewhat steer the ship in a direction that is beneficial to you and your family. Mm-hmm. You know, I can recall coaching youth sports.
Yeah.
One of the reasons why I started doing it was because I didn't like the way some of the coaches was dealing with my children. And I'm like, I'm going to get in this and do it myself.
Yeah.
And in the process of doing that, you know, I was able to schedule my life around that. And I'm blessed to be able to have the type of job at the time that gave me the flexibility to coach. You know, most people think that when you're coaching, you're just coaching within the lines of the field, or whether it's the football field or the basketball court. But effective coaching is not just in that moment of the play. Effective coaching is preparation. And so when you're preparing somebody to be able to shoot a free throw or score a touchdown, you know, you're getting to a point to where you're helping them to understand the benefits of scoring, but you don't know, you never know what's going on at that person's home. Effective coaching is knowing what that individual is going through off the field.
Yeah.
You know, you understand why someone is not executing. They're not being able to score. They're not being able to, you know, do the fundamentals. Well, because their mind is on something or a problem or some young girl or a problem of not making their grades. And, you know, an effective coach understands what's going on outside or off of the field, off the court.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's such a blessing what you just said about your time and being able to be there for your sons. And I really appreciated you as a coach for my kids, because I really trusted you. Out of all the coaches, I truly appreciated you. And then for me, especially with my youngest son, see my old
schedule.
Listen. You have to get a taste of Treats of the Realm, man. Two sisters who love making treats for special occasions, or if you just want to treat yourself. Hey, listen, you can find them on Facebook. You can find them on IG, or you can email them at treatsoftherealm@gmail.com, or give them a call, 910-322-3667. Treats of the Realm. And then for me, especially with my youngest son, see, my oldest son, I was a beat cop, and so I was crazy. By the time my youngest came, I could devote more time with family. And so, and that's when I actually met you. But when he turned 13, and I know you kind of touched on this with to Jay, fair warning, you know, to parents, 13 can be a tricky age because they start becoming a little more distant, and it's kind of hard to crack them and get information, you know. So I'm going to ask Cornelius this. What do you do to create a safe space for your child so they can open up?
Yeah, that's a great question, which is not even just about fatherhood. It's really about manhood.
Yeah.
But let's go back to something someone said earlier. You can't just say, hey, what's going on with you? They're not going to open up that way, or they're going to give you limited information. You have to be embodying it. So as a man and as a father, I lean into my masculine, but I also lean into my nurturing, loving, soft side. And I'm okay with that. And I don't apologize for that. I'm still a man's man. Like we can do what we got to do, but I understand the nature of how the design of how God made us, the DNA.
Yeah.
And if you don't embody that, the example's never there. They're not going to do it either. And so, and safety as a father, that's the number one job, is to make sure that the wife and the kids feel safe. That's number one. And if you do that, Pastor just kind of mentioned that in a way. And if you do that on a foundational place early, the rest of the job is going to be much easier. If you wait till they're 13 or teenagers and you start to try to do that, it's going to be very difficult. And I'm not talking from theory. I'm talking from that's how I parented my younger children. Now I have children and I'm older and I get it now. It's so much different. I'm a parent of a 31-year-old, but I'm also a parent of a 3-year-old. So imagine how I parent differently I'm now compared to back then. So yeah, I, if I was talking to any man, I would say that's one of the biggest things, is make sure you're in tune with your emotions. And I'm sure all of you were growing up around the time I did. We didn't do that. Yeah. We didn't talk about it. And it's so important. So
it really is.
I don't want that ministry.
Look, Jay and I had something to say about that. The age gap between 3 and 1. Oh my goodness, I can only.
Boy, you said Jay and I. No, Jay Alondro and I. All three. Boy, I tip my hat to you, brother.
I'm trying to get to Pastor Holland status, boy. I can't wait to be an MP. You can't tell me nothing.
I know somebody got some vitamins, boy, because that's a lot of work. It is. I tip my hat to you, brother.
I will. Let me add one thing to that.
Uh-huh.
So my mother was like, wait, you going back in for seconds? But there's always, God always has a lesson and a blessing in everything we do. And I'm telling you right now, I feel like the man that I was. Yeah. Not having children, I needed that.
Absolutely.
So it's changing me, and where God, my life's a ministry, but it's changing me for what God has called me to be right now. And so I'm thankful. It is. Let me tell you this again. It is very difficult, but I'm equipped for it. So I'm excited. Man.
Yeah. And you're wiser now, because I can tell you, I was a kid when I had kids, you know, and just imagine being 23, 24, and we're just talking about having your children open up. I got into police mode. You should shut it down and let them come to you. You don't pressure them. That's something I know now. But back then, it was like third degree this, third degree that. So I can only imagine now at this age, I would be a lot more calm, a lot wiser. And, you know, I think I would appreciate the experience more and live in that moment. Yeah.
Oh man, you just said something, Alonzo, about living in that moment, man. I know you're moderating, but I just want to throw it out there. I think that we don't appreciate that.
Yeah.
We live in those moments, man. And so what Cornelius is saying, you know, the gap between the age gap between his children, I believe the second go around is even better. Now I don't have that in my life, but I'm just thinking that the second time around is even better because those moments that you didn't live in.
Yes.
The first time, first go around, you know that you're not going to miss that opportunity the second time.
Yeah.
Let me give this. This is something I want to say in regards to that. I can recall one of my sons playing basketball at a high level, and I was at his, you know, basketball game. And, you know, at the beginning of the season, I was that parent that, look, you need to do this and do this right. You know, scholarship is on the line. You know, you're missing opportunity. But then the last two games of his senior year, I sat down and said, you know what? Let me just enjoy this. I'm not even coaching from the stands. Let me sit down and just soak this up and be the biggest and loudest cheerleader. My wife looked at me, was like, what's wrong with him? I had an aha moment that this is coming to an end, and I need to make sure I live in this moment. And so, and it's not just in sports, but it's in every moment where it is when you understand your son has had a heartbreak, where you your child has they have disappointed themselves in a way where they may not have met the expectations that they set for themselves.
Yeah.
You know, those moments you may not have handled it the right way initially, but if you get a second opportunity, you're gonna make sure that you execute and execute well. So that's why I'm waiting on the grandkids.
Yeah. Preach. Preach, brother. That is, and so speaking of that, let's talk about discipline, because that can be tricky. The way we probably disciplined back then versus how we would discipline now, right? I'm gonna ask Jay this. Because some children are more fragile than others, and you learn that when you're raising your kids, right? Some may need discipline in a different way, but let me ask you this, Jay. How do you handle discipline? What does it look like to you, and how do you administer it without damaging the trust of that child?
Who, doggy? Don't be trying to give me no CPS case. I'm too smart. I'm a joke. I'm joking. But it ties into what Cornelius and Pastor Holland was saying. The only thing that I like to clarify is there's a difference between effective communication and preferred communication. And so sometimes we're saying like a child or a person isn't practicing effective communication when really it just isn't our preference.
Yeah.
I'm a people watcher and an observer. And so I have two girls and they have two different personalities and also two different communicative styles. One, I found like public embarrassment just doesn't work well. And when I say public embarrassment, I mean like sometimes like you're yelling at them like, what are you doing? Yeah. Even if it's to save them, it could cause such a level of fragility for them to break. And it's hard to pull them back to redirect. So one you can yell at, the other one you can't yell at. And so when I realized both of them have a preferred one. So even when it's down to administering discipline, my discipline comes more as thought partnership and a suggestion. What does that mean? I have one child who has always been ruled by authority. So she wants to dress herself. She wants to make decisions in her life and all of that at a young age. And she still is way 16 years later. So punishment for her is me making decisions for her. Well, I pick out what you're going to wear. And that will break her down more than she was like, can you just whoop me, please? I'm picking out your clothes all week. Well, at least can I wear this? I don't know. I don't know what you're going to wear.
So Jay, you dress her crazy like a clown or something, man.
Here go the weight. You ain't going to embarrass yourself, so you're going to make them look nice. But for her, it wasn't the fact that these are her same clothes and she was going to look nice. It was the fact that she didn't make a decision on what she was going to wear that day.
Wow.
The same thing for food choices. I limit your food choices. I will tell you what you're going to eat. Mm-hmm. And so that broke her down more than anything. Versus saying, let's do some type of corporal punishment. Mm-hmm. The other one, it's talking. It's literally like if you do a stern talk, she cries for like days. Like, I let you down and So now we're at a place where, and I had to learn that. So let's be clear. I had to learn that. At first, I was old school, like pop, pop, get both of them. But then when I realized that it wasn't working, because one is like, okay, go on and whoop me and done. I was that kid. When I'm getting a whooping, my mom used to whoop me every morning because she knew I was going to do something. Like every day before school, she was like, come on down here and get this whooping. And I promise you, I ain't let her down. So that's the other thing. I'm not a parent that when I look at my kids and like where they get that from, I kind of know. I kind of know. I know the tree. So my thing is I found what works for them. Like even when it's time to have a conversation, my oldest, she talks better through text. I would prefer for her to come in the room and sit down and talk. But no, she just communicates better through text. And I ask her her thoughts on that. And she flows that way. My baby girl, she wants to cuddle and talk. And she likes to do it in person. So if you look at our text threads, hers is more like, come here. Are you free? Are you available? Can you come down? Can you do this? That's her. Well, the other one, it's paragraphs and paragraphs and paragraphs. And then when she can't explain something, she even sends me reels explaining what she meant. And so that's how we deal with discipline over here. And it's just, it's been giving a lot of peace. It's not what I prefer, but it was work for them. And we're getting to a place where there's like limited disciplinary actions at school and everything because we're finding out what works for them.
I like your approach, brother. That psychology behind the parenting piece. I don't think prior or previous generations really tapped into that. I love it. And it reminds me of my brother, Pastor Bird. He at his church, he was talking about his kids and he was saying, like, he would say, may I make a suggestion, and how that was so much effective. And I took heed to it because instead of me chiming in what they have told my wife, I lectured them. Hey, let me make a suggestion. That goes off a lot better. But you also talked about what are you doing? You know, kind of embarrassing them and or hurting their feelings, too. And that can have long lasting effects. Right. And so, but let me ask you this, Dr. Holland, how do you apologize or repair the relationship when it does go sideways like that? You've caused damage or hurt their feelings. How do you apologize?
Well, first of all, I think you have to be transparent and be humble about whatever the offense is and just explain to them, look, I apologize. I'm sorry. You know, I would do it different. If I could, and you know, just make sure that you are emotionally available for them. Some people don't do that. They just say, well, I know all the answers. I know it all. And it's because I said so. And you just have to be willing to just be humble and submit and say, I don't have all the answers. This is the humanity side of me. I realize that I'm your father. And at one point you probably looked at me as a superhero. Let me help you understand that being a superhero is someone is understanding that what your strengths and weaknesses are. And this is my weakness.
Yeah.
You know,
I love it. That's spot. And so, you know, again, I keep comparing the previous generation, but you didn't do that as a parent, right? You didn't apologize. Another thing, you didn't cry. You didn't let them see that vulnerable side of you. So, let me ask you this, Cornelius, as I was just talking about vulnerability, what role does it play in your parenting style when you talk about raising your kids and allowing them to see you get emotional, or how does that look on your side?
Man, it's everything. Like somebody said the word humanity, and I'm willing to show my children the humanity in me, and they both hit it on the listen, I don't have all the answers. And I think kids connect with that. It creates a chamber of trust way more than I have it all figured out. I'm a guru. No, I'm still learning. Like, look, I've been doing this for 30 years and I still don't have all the answers, because we can't all have all the answers. Cause as Jay said, life is nuance. So every situation, every day, it's going to be a little bit different. So I think just leading as men are supposed to with that, I think the kids gain a level of respect. And, you know, language matters. And so it takes a little bit more work to, like, for instance, to parent, as Dwayne says, where I'm going to take all this time up front, but you can't. I have multiple children. I can't yell at all. There's one that I have to speak a little bit louder to. There's one I need to whisper to. And if I break that, it does not work. And so it's making my job harder as a parent. So it's worth the investment of starting and doing it early. But the emotional part, I am really tired and exhausted of seeing men, not just fathers, but men in general, not lean into the wholeness of who God created us to be and hurting themselves. I'm really an advocate for the whole man, the total man. Don't put me in a box. If I'm hurting, I'm going to cry. If I'm happy, I might cry. And I don't think that God installed these tears in my body as a mistake, right?
Mm, yeah.
But I went decades. Let me say that again, decades, not crying.
Wow.
I wouldn't allow myself to cry because I have been, since I was a young man, child, I've been told only punks cry, only girls cry, only, y'all know. Yeah. And I had to unlearn that behavior, and now I teach it, and I embody it. And if I'm in a space and it requires tears, they coming out, and I don't apologize for that. And you know what's funny? Every time it's happened, people have come up to me after and be like, "Yo, bro, like, how do you do that?" Like, "Yo, I'm just being human."
That's right.
And I hope it liberates more people to do the same. So that's how I move, and I'm not apologetic for it.
You and I share the same sentiment on that, brother. And like my boys, they got to the point, they just ragged me. Like, we go to a movie and they like, "All right, here, dad about to cry in the movie." I just could. It's always been like that. I just, hey, you got to be real. You got to be yourself, man. Man, I appreciate that. So how do you teach your children values, faith, and character? And this is for you, Jay.
It's funny. I was thinking about this too. And I'm gonna ask Pastor Holland this too. When did you realize you was the P that made your kids the PK? Cause I had that revelation one day. I was like, these kids are like, they demon possessed. Oh, I'm the P that made them the PK. It's my fault. But I think what it is that for me, freedom